Blog Talk Radio.
Break it down, chant it down, book. Break it down, chant it down, book. Break it down, chant it down, book. Break it down, chant it down, look. Human life in a tight crunch, hypnotized 9-to-5 world. Yep, that's right, the paradigm sucks. Improvise, empathize, force. Break it down, check it out, book. Chant it down, check it out, book. Chant it down, make analysis. Chant it down, all the fallacies. Chant it down, you've been lied to. Chant it down, we see right. Metamorphosize with like a lamp
presenting
light to it.
Live from the Hawaiian Islands, it's Chant It Down Radio with your host Lumen, the people beyond.
Break it down, chant it down, book. Break it down, chant it down, book. Break it down, chant it down, book. Break it down, chant it down, book.
Welcome, chant downers of the system. Welcome to Chant It Down Radio. Are you chanting down out there? I hope so, and welcome back to another episode of Chant It Down Radio. This is episode number 42, and this is a special episode called Movies That Chant It Down. So we're going to go to the movies today and check out the movies that really make a difference in helping the truth come out. And that is what I'll get to in just a little bit. But if you're just tuning in and you first-time listener, I always say on the beginnings of the shows, listen to the archives just to get the idea of the show, because now that I've established certain concepts of the show, I'm not going to, you know, give any warnings, just kind of go right into it, and you'll know how, you know, this show runs and the ideals of the show. So, and I hope you enjoyed the last episode of the System Tentacles. That was System Tentacle number 19, Civilization, Part 2. I know there's a lot to that there, but what that means, and if you haven't tuned into those episodes, that is a great foundational way of knowing how the ideals of the show come out. The System Tentacles, a series of shows that I've been doing for pretty much a year now, and finally did the last one as far as you know, pretty much the last one. I'm going to come back and flesh a few out, but they're here and there. I'll probably, you know, come back to a few just to give a little more info on those. But yeah, a great series of shows. The last one I did was, you know, a full chant down of the system and all its tentacles. So that was kind of like almost like the grand finale of it all, just showing you, you know, what the tentacles of the system are and how they wrap around us and how when we take them off, we can actually see who we really are. And that'll be the next soon starting a new series of shows, which I'm going to call People Beyond, because we are people beyond the system. We are more than this. And this next series of shows will kind of help us and myself, as I go through them, understand, you know, who we are without the system, who we are by ourselves, and know that, you know, how much influence has come from the way we live that makes us up, but that's not really who humans are. So I'm going to start that series of shows coming up, and that will be more on the positive swing of things. As you know, I've been going over the more negative or bad things attached to us, but we must know what's bad in order to know what's good. So you kind of have to separate the two, and the system tentacles are a valuable resource of information. So if you have not gone through those, please listen to the archives, because these episodes are all very important to how we are on Earth and who we are. And I think they're done pretty well in consideration of a low budget radio show such as this one. They really you know, there's a lot of information in them, so I always recommend to take it sort of in, you know, segments, kind of listen to some here or there and fill it in along the way. And no, they're not perfect. They don't offer every solution, but I feel that there's a lot of valuable information. So listen to them as they go in order. If you go on to the blog talk, well, just Google up Chant It Down Radio, and you'll get the page for this show, and check out the archives. Episode 15 on up is the System Tentacles. However, there are some in between here and there that weren't related to those shows, randoms. That's all right, though, breaking it up, making giving you different flavors along the way. Here's another flavor today, which is movies that Chanted Down. Spread the word, too. If you enjoy this show and you're getting a lot out of it, then let others know that need to chant it down or that do chant it down, because it's for all. It's for those that know and don't know and in between, and anybody that can handle the information. So if you enjoy it and you really think that it's a positive thing, then tell your friends and put it on social networking if you want. There's a lot of ways to, get it out there. Me, I spend such a small time of my life on this radio show, and if I spent any more, at least right now in my life, I wouldn't be able to maintain the rest of my life. So I cannot really work on promoting it, at least right now. So if you know people that like the information, spread it, because I can always use more listenership. I'd rather have a few strong listeners than a bunch of people that just sort of listen. So I guess, as I said, I went through the System Tentacle shows, that each one sort of progressed and got to places where most people don't want to hear the information, or it discards some of their belief systems. Well, I think I ended up with less listeners along the way up. But that's all right, because some people need time to think about things, and some people just can't handle the truth too, and that's okay. Maybe later on it'll sink in. Seeds take time to grow, So this episode doesn't require prerequisite knowledge, but you'll get the concepts better if you've been a listener. And so tonight's show, this is not a complete list of movies that chant it down. But if you have any movies that you want to add to the list, please email me at stayrootsmusic@gmail.com. For now, that's how you can get in touch with me on the show, and I can get out, get back to you when I can. This is an incomplete list. I find that these movies are very, very important to understanding the truth here on Earth, and they all have very good concepts, and there are many more. There's only so many movies I can cover, but these are movies. These are, feature-length films. These are not documentaries, so that's a separate list, and not a bad idea for a show. I think I maybe will eventually get into a promotional show of documentaries that help spread awareness, but that's a different type of show. These are feature-length Hollywood films, pretty much. And I'm sure, there's some independent films I don't know about. So, yeah, let me know if I'm missing anything here. And I'll send out a warning, there will be some spoilers here, but I'll try to avoid them as much as possible and warn before I give them out, if you haven't seen these movies, just so you can still enjoy them. But I've tried to be careful on that when going through this information. All right, so movies that chant it down. One of the first on my list here, and there's no particular order to these at all, just one that I feel is an important one that goes over some good concepts, is the movie Falling Down. I think it was made in the mid-90s, if I'm not mistaken. Falling Down, starring Michael Douglas, and he's a normal white-collar geek who snaps one day in traffic in L.A. He decides to take matters into his own hands. He rages against whoever gets in his way. Robert Duvall is a detective who is on one day from retirement, who goes on the trail of Michael Douglas on his rampage. So, This movie is about a man, ordinary person, who snaps. And this can happen. I mean, the pressures of society get to people. I mean, how many people just snap like him? These base emotions that are in this film have a place. And I think that some people, especially in the sort of new age train of thought, often think that these base emotions that are bad. Well, sometimes reactions can be bad, but base emotions are telling you something for a reason. It's kind of like a map. So you follow where these feelings are leading you, why, and go back to, you know, why you feel this way. Base emotions are there for a reason, and sometimes they're actually there for action too. You know, I mean, have you ever been there when you're like, you know, you're kind of like, this sucks so bad, I can't handle it anymore, I'm going to snap. It's even easier to get there when you're awaked to what is going on and you understand the control system and what it really is. And so this movie takes a frustrating look at poverty, commercialism, and the economy. It takes a look at the things that frustrate all of us on a daily basis, and, you know, that everybody has their threshold. And for the character William Foster, this is his. William Foster recently divorced and has a restraining order from his ex and can't see his young daughter. So this behind him and sitting in L.A. traffic and then his air conditioning goes out is already a foundation for rage. I can relate, you know. Traffic is awful. We here in Honolulu experience tons of bottlenecks and traffic jams. We're right up there as the very worst in the U.S. Some people, you know, they don't think about that when they come over to this island, but it's full of cars, and you're sitting there, and it's hot, and it's a low, frustrating vibration that you're stuck in traffic. And so that can make anybody snap, and it just depends. But this guy, you know, he decides to leave his car on the freeway, stuck, and he walks into a neighborhood, and he goes down, and he goes to a store, a convenience store, and he needs to make a phone call, but the Korean store owner refuses to give him change for the phone call. And it's that kind of attitude where people won't bend the rules to do something humane, and it's so frustrating. And I get that. I see that a lot. You go somewhere, you can't use their restroom or something. I mean, that just adds to the frustration of everyday society. Nobody trusts anybody. You can't just help somebody out because they need some change. And, of course, when this movie was made, it was before everybody had cell phones. So he had to, you know, make a call on the payphone. And so the store owner refuses to give him change. And see, that's the rule followers, the true systemites, you know. And it makes you want to snap, too. Like last episode, I was mentioning how I snapped at a parking meter person when I was in a parking lot. I was going to a business. They only have 10 stalls for the business. And next to it, there's more stalls for multi-use parking. I decided, well, all 10 stalls were taken, so I'll take the very next one over. And I was only in the business for 10 minutes. I came back, the guy gives me a ticket, and I see him putting it underneath my windshield wiper, and I tell him, I was like, well, wait a minute, you know, can't you just waive that? I was only here for 10 minutes. Don't you guys have a grace period? And he's like, no, I don't work for them. And he wouldn't do anything about the fact that I was only there for a little bit, and I parked as close as I could to the parking stalls allotted to that business, and he didn't care. So I crumpled it up and I threw it at him. And well, that's not much of an action, really, but I snapped. And that's the thing, that people often take shit from people all day long just because it's the rules and you got to follow the rules. Well, I decided to take matters into my own hands and say, I'm not going to pay this. This is unjust. And so I threw it back at him. And he did nothing. You know, he was really quite scared from that reaction. I just drove off. And I don't think he called the police. I don't really know. But those tickets in that lot, they won't go on your record, I found out. So it's all good. But we all need to be standing up that way. And it's okay to snap at unjust things as long as you're not going to get arrested. So, a little side rant story, but that kind of goes into how this character in Falling Down feels. Only he goes through a you know, an adventure, and this is just a movie, but he gets an altercation with some LA gang members, and they leave, and he is getting followed by them, but something happens to where they crash, and he the character William Foster goes and steals a bag of automatic weapons that the gangbangers have while they've been crashed. So he gets out of it, and he's mad. This guy is frustrated, and he's not frustrated at necessarily the wrong things. Things that all mess with our heads and make us upset too. I found the scene where he's in a fast food restaurant, and they switch the lunch menu. He wants breakfast, but it's like 10 minutes afterwards or something, and he wants the breakfast, and they won't give it to him. So here again, stupid rule followers. And so I guess, you know, that made him snap too. And the funny part is he actually shoots his gun up in the air, and he you know, everybody's freaking out, and he wants the breakfast menu, and other people want it too. It's a funny look at things. You know, then there's another scene where somebody impatient to use a phone booth after him, this guy snaps at everybody that's kind of unjust, because it's the rude behavior that people get away with every day. You know, William shoots the phone booth he stole with the automatic weapons that he stole from the gangbangers. He just shoots the whole thing up after he's done with it because of that impatient guy. And it's funny because it makes you're able to live through this character who is snapping at the stupid things in our society that we all wish we could do, but we can't get away with. But the problem that is coming for him is, well, he's gaining a trail, and he goes and hides inside an army fatigue store for a little bit, and the person who's in there that's running the army surplus store is a white supremacist, says he's proud of William for killing the gangbangers that he stole it from, who were, you know, I think Latino. And after a quarrel, and, you know, this William Foster, he realizes this guy's a white supremacist and he's no good, and he doesn't agree with what the army surplus owner's talking about. So eventually, after an altercation and a quarrel, he shoots the guy in the head. So this movie touches on ignorant people, and we see the messed up world through his eyes. He's doing something about it, you know, in his own way. Even if it's the wrong way, we understand the frustrations. And there's the funny part scene where construction workers are just standing around, basically wasting tax dollars. And he gets tired of the fact that that's going on, and he gets upset, and he stole a grenade launcher from the army surplus store, and this little kid actually shows him how to use it, so he blows up the construction site, and, you know, things you always wanted to do but couldn't. And you can relate to these frustrations. You see how someone so easily can be turned into him, so much pressure to live within civilization. And that's the Civilization System Tentacle you should listen to, both episodes 1 and 2 of that particular show. But here's the important message to extract from the film is more people need to be getting mad. Mad at the way things are. Enough to do something. You know, mad is an important emotion if channeled right. You got to run it through your filter. You see how righteous or unrighteous it is. You can't just get mad and be reactive. Even me, in the story I just gave a little bit ago, was reactive and maybe not the smartest thing to do, but at the same time, we all shouldn't be putting up with the stupid little rules. And some people have got to, you know, put a stop to it. It's a slow reversal that we need to do here, I guess. So this movie shows you, you know, how easily someone can snap. It shows you the things you hate too, and somebody's actually doing something about it. Even if his motives are screwed up, He's actually taking action. His flaw, though, is he's taking action without a plan. He doesn't probably even understand the control system and how it works. So if you listen to my show, you probably know the system tentacles. And like I say, you know, that kind of helps shows you how it works and, you know, what we're under and what's wrapped around us. But you know, the idea of getting mad and frustrated is okay. But see, the flaw is this movie is reactive. The movie promotes a reaction that relieves quick anger. And this point in time, they really want our reaction, and we can't change the scenario with guns and rocket launchers. And so that's what not to take from the movie, because it's not going to work out for you, you know? Violence outbreaks, they don't promote anything productive. And oftentimes, of course, innocent people die. And that's not at all what we want. That's not what anybody wants, or not too many people want, unless maybe some of the elite would like that, sure. But, yeah, they have weapons too, and they can wipe out the whole earth faster than waiting for your next meal. So there's no scenario that works with weapons like that, you know. You know, up yourself on the knowledge of what they have, and so it doesn't work that way. But this freak out of this character in the movie is one step up from those crazy shooters, lone nuts, school shootings, you know, more directed toward the right thing. But you have to really sift through it. You got to go, well, most of these real shootings here are false flag that at least I can study up on and enough people are talking about. But overall, you know, this movie is good for the understanding of how crazy this world is and showing the archetype systemites that need to be chanted down. And so that's the important things to take from the movie. And the reaction, not necessarily good to like that, but people have got to stop putting up with the stupid rules, and everybody needs to be, yeah, putting their foot down. Basically, that's what you should take from the movie. Leave the rest. If I were going to rate the movie as a good movie, I'd give it 2.5 stars out of 4. If it, you know, it's about the important extraction of the message as a film itself. Yeah, you know, it's a good watch, but it's not an amazing movie or like a classic. But it does go over some important things. So that's Falling Down. Haven't seen that yet. Hopefully, I didn't put too many spoilers in there. The next movie on the list is Office Space. Now, this is considered these days, I think, kind of a cult classic. A lot of people like Office Space. It's a satire on white-collar corporate slavery. Peter Gibbons is a drone for a software company who is well on his way to a nervous breakdown when a hypnosis mishap opens his eyes. He becomes so apathetic to his job that he can't even muster up the energy to quit. He's even mistaken by a pair of corporate consultants as middle management potential. His pals are laid off in the process, so he comes up with a plot to embezzle the company. That's Office Space. Office Space is a really funny movie, and it's made by the creator of Beavis and Butthead, Mike Judge. And I feel that he has some insight, at least on some things. And I do like his humor, and it's just straightforward and funny. The main character in Office Space, Peter, works for Inatech. It's a huge corporation, and what they're doing is they're trying to gear computers over for the 2000 switch. Remember when Y2K was the threat that all the computers would shut down because they only have 2 digits instead of 4. So all these software people are basically just changing the numbers around so everything works. And this is one of the worst things that has come into the workforce over the last 30 to 40 years, and that's corporate America. I mean, Everything's so soulless, and they're out to pinch every little penny. You're just a number. And that's what has killed the cool things about America. I'm not a nationalist, but the cool things that were about America are the little mom-and-pop shops that make it unique. And corporate America has destroyed all that. And like I've said before, some of the coolest types of shops and things like that have closed down because of technology too, such as record stores, even video stores, things where you could actually go and pick things out. The physical item has been lost. So those are some of the coolest things that have been taken away by corporate America. And everybody works with the suit on. You're just a number. And so this is a chant down of it. And it's pretty funny. And all the little stupid rules and laws, it makes it easier to want to quit if you ever work for any of these corporate assholes. So Peter has a session of job hypnotherapy. He hates his job every day more than the next. And so his girlfriend at the time in the movie brings him to job hypnotherapy. And during the hypnotherapy, he's set in a trance to a relaxed place, and the hypnotherapist has a heart attack and dies right there. But this changes his life. He's in a new state of mind. Whatever this does to him sets him on the journey in the movie. Next day, he doesn't even get up. He skips work. The alarm goes off. He just keeps on pressing the snooze button. His girlfriend calls, tells him that she's been cheating on him, and he doesn't care anymore. He's free. Something snapped inside of him, and so the next day he goes to a place where he has a crush on the Jennifer Aniston character, and he asks her out for lunch. And he tells the girl as they sit down that he just stopped going to work. And the funny thing is, I don't think I'm going to go back there either. And she's like, wait, you're not going back? And he's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going back. I just don't think I want to go there anymore. She's like, oh, okay. It's a real funny little conversation in the movie. And I love that simple line because Peter is taking charge of his life. That's what he's doing in this movie. He's saying, well, wait, I don't want to go there. I hate that place. So I'm just not going to go. And so that's one of the greatest things is to live through a character, vicariously live through a character that takes charge of his life. But I'll come back to that because we need to take care of our own lives. You know, one of the funniest things about this movie is every character is funny. From his coworkers to one of his coworkers, his name is Michael Bolton. He hates that he is the same name as the singer, and Samir Nainanejad, who is a worker from Saudi Arabia, I think it was, and no one can say his last name right. And to the Milton character who mumbles all the time, he just like mumbling under his breath, and his boss. Hilarious. So the guy's like, yeah, okay, all right. And he's a perfect corporate boss. Mr. Lumberg is his name. And so everybody in this movie is funny, which is a very entertaining thing. It's almost like going into a cartoon in a way. And they nailed it with the corporate consultants, they're total archetypes for corporate America. These guys are coming in and laying off everybody, and they're these two guys that, you know, they have all these, you know, little jokes between each other, and they're just the perfect brainwashed corporate people. And I've worked for corporations before, and I swear I've known those people. So they nailed it with these corporate consultants. So Peter eventually comes back and does everything he wanted to do. He parks in his boss's spot. He wears whatever he wants. He destroys all the items that annoy him and doesn't listen to his boss. And him and his friends, eventually, they steal the printer that never works and breaks down, and they take it out in the middle of a park, and they beat it down with baseball bats listening to gangster rap. and it's a hilarious scene, just the beat down of what they hate, and it's funny because it just gives you this classic feeling, you know, that you can get inside these characters and their frustrations. And we root for this character, Peter, because he's becoming alive and he's chanting down everything we hate. So they come up with this embezzlement scam that actually is a good idea. They just collect pennies off of pennies that come from the profit of the company, a similar plot to Superman 3. And the only problem, and this is a spoiler in the movie, is that they figure out that how much money really is missing. They end up getting like $300,000 the very next day, and they know that the company's going to see that missing, so that becomes a big problem for them. But anyway, the movie's a great movie, but the ending is the big flaw. I feel like the ending was just kind of slapped together. Doesn't offer a solution to the problems addressed. It says, yeah, work sucks, but there's nothing we can do about it. That's almost the exact line that the Jennifer Aniston character basically says. Lots of people hate their jobs, but you go out there and you find something you like. That was her solution at the end, and basically it's trying to sum up the movie that way. And that's not it. So although it touches on great things, it doesn't give you much of a solution. It brings you on a nice train ride or like amusement park ride, and then you get off early. And that's the only problem with the movie. But the important thing to take from it is quitting your job and taking your life back. I mean, we don't have to live this life of drudgery. And so harness the power of quitting, saying no, and being free. These are all very important concepts, and that's why this movie hits home with so many people, because it's taking your life back and saying, I don't want to do this reality anymore, especially since 90% of the people that have jobs hate them. So you can't do that with your life. Your life is more valuable than that. So chant it down. So overall, I give this movie 3 stars out of 4. I mean, it's overall is a fun experience, funny for great characters, and the apathetic attitude can be helpful when used right. It helps not to care about the bullshit job, but do care about what's essential to human life. So the important things to extract from Office Space. So a great movie and a fun time. If you've never seen it before, check it out. It chants it down in its own way, for sure. Well, the next movie that chants it down is They Live. Excuse me. They Live is a really cult classic, and I never saw it till actually I was more awake. So for me, I was late to They Live, but it's a semi-serious science fiction spoof about a drifter who discovers an alien conspiracy. They're taking over the country under the guise of what people consider normal life. And it's based on a short story called 8 O'Clock in the Morning by Ray Nelson. So I have never read that, but I feel now motivated to read that story, see where that came from. Because this movie is right on the button. It hits the nail directly. And this is so important, this movie. This is like one of the most foundational movies for anybody who sees the truth already and they get it. And that's how you get this movie. And it seems like I've never watched it with someone that doesn't get the truth, but I can imagine that it would be not a movie that they could see until they really understand the truth, because it's for those that know, almost. But what an awesome chant down. So the drifter, I don't think he even has a name in the movie. I looked on the credits and it's nada, so that means nothing, so it's kind of funny. But the drifter comes to L.A. to find work, and he meets Frank at work. He's a hard construction laborer, and Frank at the end of the day, offers the drifter to stay basically at a homeless shelter. They have a place set up for people that work there but don't have anything set up yet. So they kind of live outside, and Frank and the drifter have a dialogue together about the world. And Frank basically just says it straight up. The factory shut down, and he had to leave his wife and kids in Detroit to do this construction work. He hates it, and he sees no future in America. He sees it as a big game. He sees it to whoever gets to the end of the finish line first. And, you know, he sees this whole system as a big game. And there's so much just in his speech that is so right on. And he talks about steel mills closing down, laying people off, and the bosses giving themselves raises. And, you know, he's like, if they close one more factory, we should take a sledgehammer to it all. And that's the attitude that should be harnessed and known about. A lot of people kind of shut down that attitude, like, oh, that's a bad thing to talk that way, and including the drifter. He even sort of shut it down. But it's an important voice, this voice of frustration. People getting close to quitting because everyday struggles are so hardcore. You know, you're just a paycheck away from being broke. When are people just going to quit? You know, the people that are just hanging on by a thread. And this is so frustrating. And this goes into the same feelings of the last few movies that I've been talking about, is just that right there. And it's so simple, too. And so many people are just hanging on by a thread. And when will the thread finally break, you know? So, but the drifter, who is the main character, he still believes in America. He believes that hard work will still get you somewhere. And so I felt at first when watching it a long time ago, I was like, oh, well, I definitely agreed more with the character Frank. But the preacher in the movie has a powerful message, and it's a pretty important message. I mean, everything in this movie is pretty direct dialogue, so for some people it's not so easy to accept maybe some of it. But the preacher in this movie has a message. I should have queued it up, but the problem with this show, this system I use, Blog Talk Radio, is can't play any snippets or any samples of anything. So I can only quote, and so I didn't feel like quoting the whole speech. But if you Google it up, the preacher's message in They Live is profound, and it basically is talking about them, the elite behind the scenes, the Illuminati. And if you haven't checked it out, I mean, that's so right on. And a lot of this movie, you'll see images of people looking blankly at computer screens or TV screens, and everybody's really kind of in this sort of trance. And the drifter, the good thing about the drifter character is he's just mobile, and that's an important place to be to see the truth, is you kind of have to not be stuck in the system so much. You have to kind of be more able to move freely. So he's not one of the people that's sitting in front of the TV screens. But at the homeless shelter, they're watching TV, and the signal of the TV is jammed, and the truth is told by the rebellion network of people to the general public. And the general public, the people that don't get it, they get a headache, and they're like, they can't handle it. They're like, where's my program? That's very symbolic of telling the truth. A lot of people can't handle the truth. It makes them think too much, and they like their little comfortable reality. And so how is it that it is so true? It may not give people a headache in real life, but it definitely turns them away. They'd rather go back into their comfortable TV reality. And so you know, that's where they have people. So the drifter, he follows the preacher into the church, and these are kind of spoilers. So see the movie if. Turn this off if you haven't, but the drifter follows the preacher that has been speaking the truth into the church, and he finds out the church is a cover-up, and even the singing from the outside is just an audio playing over and over again. And this church, they're making the sunglasses that see the truth. And so later on, the church gets raided, and the drifter goes in there later and finds a box, a stash of hidden sunglasses. He doesn't know what to do with them right away, but he stashes them in an alley and he puts them on. And when he puts them on, everywhere he turns, he sees the truth, what things really are. And this is this, bold in your face truth, looking at how all the different advertisements and everything in this world is either basically to make you obey, conform, consume. Some things say watch TV, buy things, exactly what things are. So that's just how you see the truth through the they live glasses. And so how important it is to know. And basically you can do that if you have your they live glasses on. You can see what things are for: distraction, conform, consume, watch TV, buy things, obey. And that's so much of the truth. It really probably does give people a headache. But in this movie, when he takes a look at money, it says, "This is your God." And that goes right into the money trance I've been talking about on so many shows. And that is it. People's real God is money. Because what do people spend time focusing on all day? Making money. Not living the truth. And so there we have the money trance again. And when he has the glasses on, then he sees who's human and who's mixed within, who's these aliens that have taken over the planet. And he tries to get his friend to see it, because this is like the most amazing thing he's ever seen in his life. So he tries to get his friend Frank to see it. And the scene to get him to try to put the glasses on is pretty incredible in the way that they have an all-out fight. A fist fight that lasts for, it's like 8 minutes. It's almost ridiculous. You think that it's going to end, and they keep fighting. It's kind of laughable, but in a way, it shows how hard it is for people to see the truth. They don't want to see the truth. Frank doesn't even want to see the truth, and yet he's speaking the truth already, but he hasn't seen the truth through the glasses. And so finally, after he puts them on, he sees the truth, joins the Drifters world, and this movie has endless parallels. I mean, society being controlled by an alien race, well, it sure often looks like that, and we haven't really got into that on this show, but I'm not afraid to go there when I start covering those sides of things as we go, deeper into this manipulation. But it is a very possible reality, and it did definitely come from something. Why people here on planet Earth have decided to live such a different life than what was at one time, and where we got off track and how people got influenced in the way that they are does show you that something foreign or alien did come into the world. And we'll get into that in a future show. This movie shows you endless parallels, like for example, the leaders you elect, they're all part of this alien race, and that money is your God. And there's so much to take from They Live, and everything is there to keep you a complacent worker. And so I won't give you the spoilers on the adventure in the movie, but that is what happens when you put on the They Live glasses, and that shows you the truth. And I think that's a very important part of the chant down here, is watching They Live. The flaw about the movie, and I suppose I can see why it doesn't get good ratings on like a critic side of things, is one thing is the dialogue is too on the nose sometimes. It's just kind of like, and the acting, and that mostly I think also has to do with the acting, was not top notch. I mean, you had a WWF wrestler as an actor, which isn't, of course, the first time, but yeah, maybe not quite quality. And so you do have that side of things to it. And It seemed low budget, which unfortunately does detract from the message. But, I mean, it's a good film because the message is so potent that it's a well worth the watch for the message. And not all these movies on this show I'm covering today are all quality 4-star films. But I'm mainly talking about the message. If I had my favorite movies of all time list, not all of them are on here because some movies I like for pure entertainment, that's all right because we also need that. But these have the message. So I give this movie 4 stars for the message, but 2 as an overall good film because it leaves you with kind of some sometimes you can't point a finger on it, but mainly it's the dialogue and maybe just the cheap music in the background. And it's very dated. It's so 80-ish that maybe some people that didn't grow up in that generation, especially more younger crowd, may not enjoy the film. But it's a cult classic, and it's a good overall film. Next film I'm going to cover here is The Gods Must Be Crazy. And if you have never seen The Gods Must Be Crazy, it's an excellent film. It is one of my favorites. And it's about the Bushmen, or Sand People, of the Kalahari, which I've covered on this show quite a bit already. And they have never seen or heard of civilized man in this movie. Their isolation in the deep Kalahari Desert has kept them in a totally different world from civilization. So they lived their own life, just like they have for thousands of years, and one day an air pilot throws a Coke bottle out of a plane and it lands on the ground unbroken. Ki, the main character, finds it and brings it back to his tribe. The tribe considered it to be a present from the gods. It was unlike anything the tribe had ever seen before. They'd never seen anything like it. There was only one to go around. So they, at first, it was just this amazing substance because they had nothing like it. In the Kalahari Desert, it's all sand on the bottom with shrubs, and it doesn't look like a desert, but it has, you know, everything's soft. There's very few rocks even, and most of the hardest substances are wood. So here you have this glass bottle, when Coke bottles used to be glass. They begin to use it as a multi-purpose tool, you know, with only one to go around. For the first time in the tribal history, since there was only one of something, new emotions came about that they weren't experiencing before, like envy, anger, jealousy, and even violence. This is a very peaceful tribe of people that are nomadical, and that I've covered many times on the show because of these important qualities. So eventually this Coke bottle causes so much pain and trouble for this tribe that they decide that it's an evil thing and it needs to be thrown off the end of the earth. So the main character, Ki, embarks on a journey to the end of the earth, and along the way he gets entangled with an assortment of people of the civilized world who he had never seen civilization before. He encounters a bumbling biologist, a school teacher, a mechanic, and they all get caught up in a gang of fleeing terrorists for a crazy showdown. So this movie is well done, and part of it has to do with the narration. The narration is very clever because the narrator explains how the Bushmen at first live isolated, their lifestyle, no surface water, no crime, free people, they have everything you need. But then he switches into civilized world. Then the narrator explains it in a way that the Bushmen can understand civilized man. So we kind of look at civilization in almost like the third person. It's a great way to understand and zoom out and look at what we're doing. In the movie, the narrator says, civilized man refused to adapt himself to his environment. Instead, he adapted his life to suit him. So he built cities, roads, buildings, machinery, and put up power lines to run his labor-saving devices. Somehow, he didn't know when to stop. The more he improved his surroundings to make his life easier, the more complicated he made it. So now his children are forced to go to school for 10 to 15 years just to learn how to survive in this complex and hazardous habitat they were born into. Civilized man has to adapt and readapt himself every day and every hour of the day to his self-created environment. So powerful is just that right there. Just taking a look at that again, that we have made our life, this civilization, to suit us. And so the more we made this civilization to suit us, the more it complicated our life. So with the intent of making our life easier, we actually made it more complicated to where kids can no longer really be kids because they're forced to go to school for 10 to 15 years just to learn how to survive in the complex and hazardous life that we live. So what that's just an important thing. And then how it talks about civilized man has to adapt and readapt himself every day. You know, of course, this goes along with lots of visuals, too, that help explain. But think about how you go from your home life in the morning to traffic life, and then driving to work life, then you get a break. So you're adapting and readapting every day. That does something to us. That sections us off, and it makes us go crazy. And so it's so much truth right there in the face of everything. So real important to check that out is just taking that paragraph and checking it out in relation to the civilization episodes that I've done. Now, when Key finds civilized people, it's hilarious how he interprets their life. He calls them heavy people because it would take a week to find food to feed them. Pretty funny. And true, the sand people, the Bushmen people, the Kalahari, are a smaller statured people. So they are not used to seeing, you know, people of larger size anyway. But, you know, us obese systemites, we need lots of food to feed us. And it's entertaining in many ways. I mean, the humor is clean, and so you can show it to your kids, you know, simple, funny humor that I feel it's been lost and regarded as stupid slapstick comedy by critics. But truthfully, I think our humor has been manipulated, and I've said this on other shows, about how our lives have been manipulated in many ways, but the humor has become more cynical, sarcastic, more hateful, self-loathing. This is clean humor, and it's just funny. And it seems like a lot of people have sort of lost that appetite for the humor. And really, this movie, there's really no flaws. Unless you don't like the humor, it has a great, simple message of chanting down civilization. It shows how crazy we all are. And I think anybody can enjoy the movie. It's from 1980, so it's a little bit dated. But at the same time, everybody can enjoy The Gods Must Be Crazy for its simplicity, yet great, complex look at what is going on. And so I give the movie 4 stars. It's an excellent movie. It does come with a sequel, and that one's good too, but the message is more clear, and usually the originals are the best movies. So that is a great one in the Channing Down movies. Let's take a little break.
experience.
All right. So movies that chant it down. Movies that are chanting it down are far and few between. But some of the biggest blockbusters even chant it down in some ways. And one that I would definitely say chants it down a lot is the Star Wars saga. I don't think I have to explain Star Wars. I've met maybe two people in my life that have never seen Star Wars, and so I think that most have, so I don't think spoilers are really something that's that big of a deal here, but if you haven't, I guess then go ahead and watch Star Wars, all of them. Star Wars, to me, is part of my childhood, so it has extra value to it, and I'm pretty sure, not positive, but I'm pretty sure that the first Princess Leia was probably the first girl I ever had a crush on. So there's something special about that as well. As you know, you have those on-screen crushes when you're a little kid. At least I did. And so Star Wars is very straight up in your face, yet such a fun adventure too. But the Empire in Star Wars is symbolic of the system, and I think anybody can see that. And the rebels are those that fight for the truth, hiding from the Empire's control. So, and those with the knowledge of the Force are very few. And so the Force you can liken to the truth or belief in the unseen, which could, you know, come into religion, but I'm thinking of, you know, the beyond religion, spirituality. And today, or in the movies, the later films, the original ones, actually, it's considered hokey religion, the those that believe in the Force. And then you got the stormtroopers, and those to me are those such as the military or the police who carry out action. Weak-minded, too, because Obi-Wan Kenobi demonstrates how weak these weak-minded the stormtroopers are with using the Force. But, you know, interesting to note in the movie and that Luke's parents are moisture farmers, and that could be a possible future for planet Earth if we continue to use it up. It's water is the most important natural resource, and so it could be just a reality in the future. Who knows? And also the Jawas are these scavengers that pick up scraps of technology. It reminds me of when I was talking about, on another show, a post-cataclysmic world and people using all the scraps laying around. Kind of like Mad Max, too, which I didn't include in this, but a good watch also. I haven't seen that in a long time. But then when the original Star Wars, which I'm talking about Episode 4, which I consider the original Star Wars, which really is, when Luke finally gets to view Princess Leia's message, Obi-Wan invites Luke to come along and learn the ways of the Force. He's like, you must come along too and learn the ways of the Force and help me. I'm getting too old for this. But Luke, he refuses the call. He says, yeah, I hate the Empire, but there's nothing I can do about it right now. I've got work to do. And so that's so symbolic of how everyone's excuses on why they're not activated. That changes, you know, though, because when he learns his aunt and uncle are killed by the stormtroopers, there's nothing left for him. And that's what it takes for some people to get motivated, to get uncomfortable and lose it all. And so he embarks on the journey with, of course, Obi-Wan. And another parallel that's important to take from Star Wars is using the Force. The Force is trusting in a force outside of the of what technological man has created. You know, life, when Luke blows up the Death Star, he decides to put down the 3D goggles or whatever he uses, and just use the Force. It's trust in God, the universe, the miraculous, or whatever you want to call it. The Force goes beyond. And so I think that's mainly what the movie's pointing out with the Force. The Empire Strikes Back, Episode 5, is my favorite for its climatic events. I mean, you got the introduction of Yoda, and Yoda's wisdom is definitely some real found wisdom that is universal. I mean, I suppose some of it, you could get carried away on the New Age side of things, but overall, you know, got some profound knowledge coming out of Yoda. And Luke asks Yoda if the dark side is more powerful, and that's symbolic that there is more light than darkness in the world. When Yoda says no, it's not as powerful, and so that's true. And the dark side, as he was saying, is based on hate, fear, basically unrighteous anger, and that's the power of the dark side, which is more the immediate power that runs this world. See, the dark side comes in with this real world. Return of the Jedi, Episode 6, has the Ewoks that I think represent the indigenous peoples, you know, finally, you know, battling the Empire, taking it back, and I think it's a well done with that as well. And those first three are classic movies in my opinion, and most people's opinion. Those are, you know, 4-star movies, and definitely in the top 100 best movies of all time for a lot of people. And then there's the more recent prequels. I personally didn't like them that much. Maybe I'm old school. I was raised on the originals, but they do tell the story good. And one of the things, the message is actually pretty strong in some of these newer movies, though, the prequels. And mainly one of the important things to take from the prequels, I think, is the Emperor character, Palpatine, you know, because he starts out in Episode 1 as this innocent politician who wants to get rid of the current chancellor because of his corruption. And he slowly works his way in there, whispering to Padme at the time, who's queen of her planet, and, you know, kind of giving her, you know, little hints that this chancellor's corrupt and they need a new one. And so you don't really notice at first and even consider that the character is even possibly the Emperor till, you know, later on in the series. Spoiler, I know, but I think most people have seen Star Wars, so. But Episode 1, I felt was mostly unnecessary in telling the story much. I felt like they wasted a lot of time with the pod race scene. I realized it was made for younger kids and kind of to hook them with the line of toys and everything to go through the, you know, the movies, catch them when they're little and bring them up watching these movies. But still, I felt that it wasn't, a lot of the storyline wasn't as necessary, but I felt that the Darth Maul character was kind of pretty cool looking, and the more you look at him, yeah, he looks like a reptilian type character, which is curious. But I didn't think that it matched Yoda and the Jedi's to live in a temple in the middle of a city that they should have been in a forest. I felt like they should have been like in a forest, on a forest planet somewhere, training like almost like Shaolin monks or something. It just didn't really work for me, that reality also. But I can be a critic, you know, and whatever. These movies have some messages. But Episode 2, we learn that the stormtroopers are clones. And how true is that? Very true of military and police, order followers. These are clones. These clones have been altered to be more docile and not questioned. So they have become more obedient in their making. And the clone host is Jango Fett, who is Boba Fett's father. And personally, they should have had him play Anakin Skywalker. I mean, even though he's Polynesian and that wouldn't match up with Luke's ethnicity in the future, however, I just found, just because Anakin I found was horrible. I think he ruined the movies for me, personally. The actor they chose, his dialogue with Padme was awful, too. I mean, if you want someone intimidating, use an actor like the one who played Jango Fett. someone that wears the dark side better. I just wasn't sold on Anakin and his whininess, and it kind of ruined it for me. I did like when the Count Dooku character subdued Anakin nicely at the end. You know, in the end fight, Yoda and Count Dooku was a nice, good scene, touched the film. But what is important to look at these prequel films is you get to see how Palpatine, the Emperor, slowly reels Anakin in by complimenting him on his Jedi skills. And I knew from then that Palpatine was the Emperor. And so, as you follow along in the storyline, the real trickster is the Emperor. I think Episode 3 was my favorite of the prequels. It really finally puts together the story that leads up to the originals. Palpatine, I think, stole the performances in this one. He lures Anakin in so nicely. He puts ideas in Anakin's mind that help him betray his allegiance to the Jedi. He wants, because of the nightmares that, of course, Anakin's having, that his just like when his mother died in Episode 2, he's having the same about Padme dying in childbirth. So he wants to save Padme from dying, which keeps getting in his dreams. So he needs this info, and the Emperor knows it. And so as he manipulates Anakin, he's explaining that only the dark side can save Padme from dying. And that's what Emperor Palpatine says to Anakin. And that's so similar to going to the system for their help. It's kind of an allegory that quick cures that the system promises always come, but they always come with a price. It's like selling your soul, like some musicians do, for success. And so this gives Anakin like an internal struggle in his mind, because as the words of Palpatine have some truth and validity, he doesn't know which side to turn to, and he's confused in the movie. And this internal struggle really does make the movie for me, I think. And the real important things to take from the movies is how Palpatine played both sides of the war. He secretly was behind the Separatists as the Dark Lord, and behind the war against the Separatists as Chancellor Palpatine. So the whole time with a giant plan in mind to form the First Galactic Empire. So symbolic, too, of the One World Government is the Empire. And when he finally forms in Episode 3 the Galactic Empire, everyone in the Galactic Senate applauses him as he announces the Galactic Empire for safety and prosperity. And, you know, there's always the reason for your safety, right? So Padme's dialogue, says something like, "This is how liberty, or this is how democracy dies," and through applause. It's true. And even though her character is a politician and she believes in this fake democracy, kind of tells me that maybe George Lucas himself only sees part of the truth, but whatever. I know that the truth does have to get filtered through Hollywood anyway. But how true it is that most of the time we accept these things for our safety and applause, just like TSA at the airport, right? So the New World Order is, of course, not one person behind it, but many of their minions and order followers. But overall, I think that the prequels are good for that message, and to tie the story of the past episodes, or really the future, together nicely. So there are many messages in Star Wars I find that are worth looking at, and so they're very powerful films. And I really don't know anybody that really hates Star Wars. They're well-done films. Of course, they're 4 stars. Even the prequels still are decent films, each one to watch. Next film on the list is Koyaanisqatsi. This is a really probably overlooked film, and I don't know how many people really have seen it. And there's no spoilers to say here, because this is completely a visual experience with no dialogue. It starts off, it's just all these different time-lapse photos in slow motion, mainly. Starts out in landscapes on Earth, deserts, forests, You got these amazing backdrops, and you know, they show nature just doing its thing. Clouds, it shows clouds forming, and yeah, there's no chemtrails. So, and that's something to take note of. This movie was made, I think, in 1982, and you watch these fluffy clouds, all right? But move slowly into city life as you start watching. It starts as all of a sudden you're in a rock quarry, and then you start seeing machinery and bulldozing and dynamite explosives. And it shows images of traffics and buildings and busy transportation centers, all in time lapse or slow motion. And it shows factory work, even like hot dogs and bologna and crap food being made and people going to work. What's amazing is the time-lapse photography of some of these overhead shots looking at things like patterns of lights that people have no idea they're making. But, you know, from a God's eye view, looking down and seeing in fast motion, you know, just all the crazy lights we make with our cars and the buildings. But Koyaanisqatsi is a look at human life, basically, and it shows humans and civilization, just looking at the different faces and characters, and lots of lost souls and hardened people from the system. So it kind of shows these characters that are taken right out of the system that are randoms, and you kind of focus on them, and you see how like, you know, kind of that expression on the face, you can see they wear it, and they've been wearing it for many years. And what Koyaanisqatsi means is life out of balance. It's in Hopi, and that's just a look at it's just that bird's eye view look at what is going on just on a daily basis. And it also, Koyaanisqatsi translates to state of life that calls for another way of living. Also, it has kind of a lot of meanings. Another one is life disintegrating. So it was incredible cinematography. It was filmed from 1975 to 1982 by Godfrey Reggio. He directed the film and he said that there is no need for dialogue. He said that our language no longer describes the world we live in. And I think that's well said. It's all visual, and that's amazing. And remember, this film is over 30 years old. You know, what would it be like to film this fast-moving life we live in today, like now, even more so, crazier? Because things have been crazy for a while. So to look at it like that, it's pretty mind-blowing. I give it 4 stars. It's a message. It's powerful, and it's no need for dialogue. It takes that zoom-out look at what we're doing as humans. It shows human slavery, the busy money trance that we do, and why we live far away and removed from nature. It's a great component to The Gods Must Be Crazy. It's actually a trilogy. I've seen the first two, and I have not seen the third, but all the same, no dialogue, very, very well done. Definitely add to your Channing Down archives of movies. Next movie is Equilibrium, and Equilibrium is a really powerful film. It's with Christian Bale, the actor who played in the newest Batman movies, and he plays John Preston. He's an enforcement officer in a future dystopian world where feelings and artistic expression are outlawed and citizens take daily injections of drugs to suppress their emotions. So the year in this movie is 2072, and the country is called Liberia, and citizens are required to take these daily injections of prosium to suppress their emotion and promote obedience. The backstory is there was a Third World War, and it caused so much devastation that the totalitarian government decided that human emotion is what causes problems on Earth. So these drugs every day suppress human emotions. John, the main character, is a high-ranking cleric who is known for his martial arts called gun kata, and he can basically take care of an entire group of people in mere seconds and come out unscathed and just shoot up a whole place before anybody can even get to him. These guys are like highly skilled, and he's one of the most highly skilled of his class. He fights in the movie. They fight a resistance movement called the Underground, which lives outside the Liberia in the area they call the Nether. And so true that the Underground is a great name for that, because the Underground is where the truth really comes from. You know, the revolution will not be televised. And so the Underground is the way that these people are able to kind of survive and survive and outside of this crazy totalitarian society. And so in the city, people are put to death in the city for being sense offenders. And even John's own wife was put to death for being a sense offender. Yet he still has two kids. And even his kids are so programmed as watchdogs for each other being a sense offender. They'll actually turn their own family member in for being a sense offender. That's how brainwashed this society is. And how powerful of a message this movie is. Everyone in this society is on a watch for anyone being a sense offender. So what happens is John ends up, and here's some spoilers a little bit, but John ends up killing his own partner when he catches him reading a book in the Nether, which is prohibited. Books, anything to do with emotion, artistic expression is banned. So John has no problem killing, because none of these people have emotions. So then John is assigned a new partner, played by Ty Diggs. And Ty Diggs is very motivated in his role, and he serves as a nemesis eventually for John. But what happens is John accidentally misses a dose, and John begins to experience emotions. And there's so much to extract from this movie, and I can only give you little snippets, but there's so many parallels. I mean, we live in this tattletale society now. I mean, anyone acting suspicious or has ideas contrary to the norm is in danger of someone trying to turn you in or think you're a terrorist. You know, we live in a sheepdog society, basically, and equilibrium is extreme, but things are slowly going there. You can see that people would be there sooner. Or let's just say the elite would like it if we were there sooner. So we would, turn in our own family members, which is already the case. Even when I was growing up, I remember a big story where some kids turned in their parents for smoking marijuana. And it's just like, whoa, seriously, that's not family. And so in this movie, emotions are not allowed in school. And, well, of course, they're not allowed in our schools, it looks like, today. I mean, less and less. You're not allowed to really even have fun. They're there to make you acquiesce with the norm. And, emotions like anger are frowned on, and not to mention the New Age schools of thought that are floating out there don't help that at all. So, but, yeah, in the movie, even if we fear that John, we even fear like that John's son is going to turn him in for being a sense offender, his own son. So that's just a look at what a totalitarian society could be like. Easily, this one could become that, the suppression of emotion, and how important emotions really are when used in the right manner, as I was talking about with falling down. Next movie is Network. Network is about a news channel, and that is getting bad ratings, and Howard Beale is about to lose his job because of it. So this movie was made in 1976, and it actually won a few Academy Awards for its best acting is incredible in dialogue. Howard in the movie is a and his producer friend, after finding out that their jobs are basically at stake, they get wasted drunk one night, and then they rant about the decline of the industry and all that. Well, this makes something snap inside of Howard. The next day, Howard deviates from his broadcast and announces that he will commit suicide on the next broadcast. And, of course, he gets fired for saying that on the network, but gets to go on one last time to apologize to his viewers and have a more dignified farewell. But once on the air, he turns his speech into a rant, claiming that this life is bullshit. This hits home for the people and causes his news ratings to spike. This is where he gives his mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore speech. One of the best speeches ever in film history, I would definitely have to say. I mean, how powerful but simple it is. All these films have simple, a lot of them have simple but powerful messages that are just like, yes, this is straight in your face. I mean, he talks about how the dollar won't buy anything anymore. Crime is rampant. People are depressed. Everyone knows things are bad, and there's no end to it. The air is unfit to breathe, and the food is unfit to eat. And he's telling people, I want you to get mad. I'm a human being. My life has value. I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. And that is, people should get that mad. And that's so important, these emotions, these thoughts and opinions are so right on, and they should be upset. Upset is appropriate, and I like how he says not to write to your congressman because I don't know what to tell them. That's it. Politics don't take care of our problems, and I think that was well put. And this was in 1976 when things were that bad then and are only worse now. I mean, we've been sitting on this unstable rock we call normal life for a long time. So what would it be like, you know, a speech like that now would hit home, you think, even more. But, yeah, I mean, brainwash has set in more too, unfortunately. He does a speech in front of a live audience that is also profound. He tells them that the TV lies, and he talks about few people even read books or do their own research. Everyone gets their information from the tube, and he tells them how much news hosts lie and tell you that everything's all right, tells everyone to turn their TV off right now. And, I mean, profound and amazing. And, I mean, network is a scenario that it would never happen in real life. I mean, this would be career suicide to these newscasters. They should do it, though. I mean, they really should. And those that realize the truth have that power. Imagine what they could do. But see, people are just too worried about, well, the paycheck. But people need to get mad as hell and not take it anymore. I mean, people are stuck because money is their survival, and only a mass quitting of the system will change things. They really got us painted into a corner, and as long as we still, you know, get our paycheck, food to eat, water, shelter, electricity, and a few extra fluff, then, yeah, people stay there. People are afraid to get as mad as hell and not take it anymore. So, but what a powerful, profound speech, and I encourage, you know, anybody to watch the movie that has not. It's a drama. It's well done, though. The dialogue is off the hook. So definitely 4 stars for Network and its content. It's a good one, and it's a classic. Next film is American Beauty. American Beauty won Best Picture in 1999, and it actually came out right around the time that I started waking up. However, I didn't see it that year, but then I really did like it pretty much right when I did see it. I thought it was pretty profound, too. American Beauty is about Lester Burnham, who is an office worker having a midlife crisis. He has an infatuation with his teenage daughter's best friend, and it's a satire on American middle class life is what it is, and it really shows a lot, yet in such an entertaining and artistically put way. Lester is supposed to be happy. He has a nice house in the suburbs and is supposedly living the American dream. I mean, this is what everybody that's working on the treadmill is striving to do or keep, you know. But in this movie, he even says in his narration, the highlight of his day is jerking off in the shower. And when you see his reality, it's not cool. And it's like a lot of real realities. I mean, it's not off frilly at all. The wife is your typical American systemite mother, materialistic, bitchy, cares about all the things you're supposed to worry about in the money-making world. And then you got the daughter, who is a typical insecure teenager, and there's all kinds of just different parallels you can really get from this whole movie just of simple life. But you know, you get them right away in the movie. Their interactions at the dinner table are so dull and unconnected from each other. I mean, they're in their own worlds. They're nothing alike, yet this is supposed to be a family. And Lester's job is at stake because he risks getting laid off. And so that kind of opens up the movie that his job's not going to be around forever, and this life's starting to change for him. Plus, he gets new neighbors. The new neighbors, you got the ex-military colonel, his introverted wife, and Ricky, the son, who videotapes everything and looks for the artistic value inside. When Lester falls into a trance watching his teenage daughter's cheerleader friend dance, it changes his life. He it's like something switches inside him, a switch goes off. And it's an interesting thing to think about here, but he wants to work out and get fit to impress her, and gives him something new in his dull life to work towards. And as perverted as it is, it's his way out of the prison. And I know sometimes things work that way in these unorthodox, unethical ways that most people would never think of. But I guess that is just a way for him to wake up. It was like the thing that snapped inside him. And he meets his neighbor kid Ricky at a banquet function, and he gets high with him for the first time in 20 years, smokes a joint, and Ricky shows Lester how easy it is to quit this job, and that his jobs are just a cover anyway for his real occupation of selling ganja. So this sparks something in Lester, so he is able to blackmail his editor-in-chief at the magazine he works for $60,000. And he then trades his car in for the one he always wants and starts smoking ganja again. He realizes that his happiest times were when he was a teenager working at a fast food joint and being free. He'd rather trade his life in for that. And the whole movie is well done. To avoid, you know, many spoilers, I'll stop here if you never seen the movie before. But the message here that is so important is that people shouldn't have, for one thing, midlife crises. That is a symptom of a root problem, that our lives are crazy, that normal is crazy, and that this life they've set up for us that's supposed to make us happy, and that's what we're supposed to be, and what we're supposed to do is insane. And so this is just a look at one story of many. We shouldn't have midlife crises. So it's just another flaw of civilization. And we live through Lester taking his life back. He's chanting his systemite naggy wife down, breaking the rules. That's real life. That's taking it back. And so, again, a resurfacing message through all these films, a lot of these films, is taking your life back out of prison. And I think that is the power that we do have, is taking our lives back. And that's the first step in the right direction. So, yeah, give it 4 stars. It's great entertainment, and the message is very important, yet very, very simple and you know, well said. So then we get to The Matrix. The Matrix is like the go-to movie for conspiracy theorists that they want metaphors. So much to draw from this series. And I ran out of time to even draw a lot from here because I have a busy life. But I mean, if you haven't seen the Matrix films, go watch them. Of course, they're excellent. It's about, if you have not, I'm sure you probably have, kind of like Star Wars. Most people have seen The Matrix, but it's a dystopian future that has humans living in a simulated reality called The Matrix. Really, the Earth was destroyed by a takeover of machines long ago, and what they did is they hooked everyone up to a computer simulated reality, and that's called The Matrix, which is normal life. And humans are being used for their electrical activity as an energy source for these sentient machines. So, you know, that's the plot line of The Matrix. And the main character, Neo, is a computer programmer who is contacted by Morpheus and agrees to meet him. And, of course, crazy things start happening to him once he's in contact with Morpheus. So agents chase him, and the agents, you know, of course, work for the sentient machines. And if he wants to survive, he must listen to Morpheus' important instructions. So by the time he finally meets Morpheus, he's asked to take the red pill, which tells you the truth, or the blue pill, which puts you back to sleep. And so I think that's so powerful, just that alone. I mean, so many people take the blue pill in real life because it's the easy way out, and so many people don't want to know more. They're stuck in their little comfort bubbles, and the blue pill is nice, and just take that, and don't worry about it, right? Well, you know, when Neo wants more, and Neo, a truth seeker, but takes the red pill. And Morpheus explains that everyone knows something wrong. The world around us is the wool pulled over our eyes, so we don't see the truth, that you are a slave, Neo. And, you know, that speech is so quoted from everywhere. And I mean, yeah, he goes over into all the important things we need to know, that we're born into a prison for our minds. And I like the line where he says, unfortunately, nobody can be told, you have to see it for yourself. And that's very powerful because really we do need to see it for ourselves and not, you can't really so much just tell somebody. It has to be something switches inside you and you go on the path. Something puts you on fire and not everybody goes through it. I don't know why, but as he explains, it's a prison that I talk about too. It's a prison that you cannot smell, taste, or touch. It's the prison without the bars. But yeah, it takes Neo down the rabbit hole, and the truth is revealed. Morpheus and his crew are, you know, a band of rebels who have unplugged from the Matrix. And there's just too many parallels to our truth to even name out of this movie. And I think I'm running out of time on the broadcast. But, yeah, I mean, the other two movies are good, too. But I'd say the basics are set up in this film. I personally liked the first two, but felt a little dissatisfied with the third. But that's just me. But there's so much allegory in these films, and many have covered it already. So I think I'm sort of just preaching to the choir, talking about The Matrix. So that's why I kind of saved it for last here, because I think I'm running out of time here on the broadcast. But a couple other films, just real quick to name them off, that Chant It Down, that are worth seeing, V for Vendetta, which has a message that needs to be filtered through. I think that there is good and bad in that film, and a lot of symbology, the 5th of November and the whole symbology of V. There's a lot of people that do go over that. Freeman is one of them, and the Knights of the Templar have to do with this a lot. And so there's some weird symbology within there, but basically it's a similar type of scenario where you have somebody interrupt the normal broadcast on television, just like Network or They Live, and tell the truth. And that's very powerful. And, of course, the movie 1984, I've never seen the whole thing. And I saw it a long time ago, which I probably should give it another watch. But the book is, of course, powerful, and that's something maybe to read and watch. Another movie that I don't hear anybody talking about, I just stumbled upon it. I do remember, though, when I was a kid, is G.I. Joe, the cartoon movie from 1987. Not the movies they made that are live action, but the cartoon movies that basically made a movie out of the cartoon series. And it goes into the fact that humans were made by a reptilian race of people, and that Cobra behind the scenes is really reptilian, and Cobra Commander was this like reptilian being, and there's a lot of little hints in there too. And I remember the first time I read David Icke and his whole reptilian thesis, I thought, wow, this kind of reminds me of that when I was a kid. So something to check out that I don't think anybody talks about. Logan's Run, another movie that is another dystopian future where you have people exterminated at 30 years old due to overpopulation, and they have this like chip in their hand, and it turns its color when it's time for them to go, and they're promised that when they're killed, they're going to be reborn into something new. And so a man and a woman escape the city and meet an old man, and that changes their whole perspective on everything and realize that they're in this reality that's been manipulated. And George Lucas, I think, was really on to some truth. And the first movie that he produced and directed was THX 1138. And it's about another dystopian future of android police, and the mandatory that these android police and military run the civilization, and there's a mandatory use of drugs that suppress emotions, similar to equilibrium, and sex is prohibited. And, well, that's kind of the opposite of today's over-sexual culture that we live in through the media. But still, the human emotion suppressed and the mass control. And all these movies kind of have to do with battling some sort of control and freeing yourself. And so that's what it is with Channing Down. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Chant It Down Radio. Those are some movies to get in touch with. Maybe you've seen some of them and maybe you haven't. And till we meet again, keep chanting it down. And we'll continue on doing the same thing we're doing, only better and better all the time. If you have any movies to add to the list, please add them, and come chant it down. Listen to the archives. All right. Much love, everyone. Chant them down.
people beyond.
Are you awake now?